This is Deanna, and our guest for the last half of the program today is Dr. Dan O'Brien, and that's O-B-R-I-E-N. He is a physician, a professor who has a passion for innovative healthcare technologies and public health. And he's really been a leader in working with several biotech and pharmaceutical companies on increasing awareness, education, and research in many diagnostic and therapeutic fields, including in the biotechnology industry. Dr. Dan, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. Glad to be on.
One of the things that where are you practicing? I was trying to figure out where you were practicing. Are you in
Missouri? I'm based
Missouri?
Out of St. Louis.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's what I thought. The thing that you wanted to talk about today, and something that is very interesting, is why aren't children getting the coronavirus or COVID-19? And that's an important thing to address, I believe.
Right. No, great question. I think the biggest thing right now is just how different the immune systems are between children and adults. You know, children can get up to 8 colds a year, and they actually develop antibodies in the bloodstream. So they actually offer some cross protection against the coronavirus, whereas older adults, the immune system tends to wear off as time goes on. So there's a big distinction in immune systems actually between children and adults.
Right. And what you're suggesting is that children develop a better immune system if they have things that that they come in contact with that their immune system naturally fights against. It just makes it stronger. Whereas older adults, their immune system is, it's older, of course, and you also have the wear and tear on the natural wear and tear on the body, and other things that make the adult immune system less protective. And what would you contribute that to?
Yes, great question. So actually in adults, the inflammatory process is much more robust compared to children, because as people age, their lung environment changes as the body responds to inflammation. So the coronavirus actually is setting up a cascade of inflammation of organs. So this understanding the inflammatory process is so crucial right now between children versus adults.
Right, and a lot of things can cause inflammatory situations. Our environment, the toxins in our food, the frequencies we experience. There's so many things that glyphosate in wheat and bad frequencies that we experience. And by allowing a child to, for instance, to experience measles and chicken pox and mumps as a child, helps those immune systems to become stronger rather than weaker. But as people grow older, that immunity goes down. Correct?
Correct.
Wow. So, what is the best way of protecting our children from getting coronavirus?
Right. Great question. I think number one is just continuing to educate, be aware. Obviously now with social distancing, you know, staying 6 feet away from individuals is really key. And most importantly, though, is the hand washing, right? Washing your hands with water and soap for at least 20 seconds.
Right. And I think that everybody should wash their hands, and after they use the restroom, People should just, it should be automatic that you wash your hands. It should be automatic that when you cough or sneeze, that you cover your mouth. Right now, take precautions about washing your hands. It's just a matter of sanitation. And there are certainly a lot of soap products out there that are available to us. So it's a matter of education for children. And it's also a matter of the immune system being strong. And in the case of the coronavirus, they get colds every year. I remember as a child that I would catch colds. And unfortunately, I think a lot of parents run to their doctor when their child catches cold, and it's a virus. I understand a cold is a virus, and they immediately are provided with an antibiotic, and antibiotics really do not address viruses. They should be used for bacterial infections. And I think that giving anybody a prescription that does not cover what they have, instead of allowing the immune system to build up the resistance, we are taking the easy way out. And we expect that when we leave the doctor's office, that we have a script. People are kind of educated that if you visit a doctor, you should leave with something. Right?
Correct. No, you make, I absolutely agree to that.
And it's really unfortunate because what it does with children, it impacts their ability for their immune system to build up. So I believe in allowing children to experience, well, they get through the colds, and they get, as I mentioned, they get 8 or more calls a year.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and just kind of let the child's body naturally, you know, fight it off. So I think that's the most important thing.
Right. Now, there has been preventative measures. There are preventative measures that parents can do to protect their children. And so we mentioned before, cover your mouth and don't touch your face or eat until you wash your hands. And what about sending them to school? They don't seem to be catching this COVID-19. What about sending them to school
right
now?
Great question. Obviously, there's a lot of buzz right around, you know, even gosh, all the news networks in regards to should we be sending our kids to school? And that's really kind of a personal choice. If we feel like, you know, again, if kids are coming in contact with other kids who are sick, that could be potentially, you know, problematic. But again, from a realistic standpoint, you can't be able to just close down school for, you know, the next several months. But you do have to be aware, right? There has to be precautions in place, and there has to be plans in place. I think right now, just the speed at which this is kind of developing, and everyone's trying to figure out, including researchers and scientists, how fast this is moving and where this is spreading. I think it's best to definitely be cautious, even in schools, and just keep a close eye and getting reliable information, you know, from the CDC, from the World Health Organization, from public health officials. And it's the reliable sources that give you more information on even schools, whether or not to send your kids and what preventive measures should be there.
Right. And there seems to be kind of a pandemic feeling that everything should be closed down, and I think that, well, a lot of children have asthma. They have a situation where you would certainly want to protect them from anything that could affect their asthma, or a preconditioned kind of situation. Any kind of allergies, you want to protect them against allergies. But this whole situation has really made a lot of people afraid, and has affected the country economically.
Correct.
What do you?
Yeah, no, it's been a huge debate right now. I mean, obviously, looking at the global markets, and I think everyone's really paying attention on how it's really impacting the economy. Even, you know, with childcare as well, as most Americans, you know, there's a lot, actually. Now, I wouldn't say most, maybe a fourth, you know, don't have paid leave. So I think looking at childcare from that standpoint is going to be important to look at in the future. And then to your point, right, in regards to the economic situation, we've looked at, you know, the lowest drop in the stock market since 1987, just a few days ago. So there's certainly, it's certainly making an impact right now in our country.
Oh, exactly. And people are emptying shelves of things like toilet paper, and there have been fights in grocery stores over toilet paper and things that we need on a daily basis. So people have become less mindful of things that they should be concentrating on. And it's a natural thing. If you think that something is going to be unavailable, you're going to rush out and want to buy a bunch of it. But it does cause it's caused an economic shutdown. Restaurants are closing. Schools are closing. Theaters are closing. Airports are being, people aren't flying. It has really caused a lot of economic stress. And then you also have to consider, don't a lot of people die each year because of the flu? How many people die because of the flu versus how many people have died because they feel like it's the COVID-19?
Right, absolutely. You know, if you look at the amount of people that have had the flu, you know, 46 million people have had the flu, you know, with only 46,000 deaths, or 45 million people have had the flu with only 46,000 deaths. So, you know, the flu has obviously been around since, you know, 2,000 years, since the birth of modern medicine, right? We only have a few months data in regards to now the COVID-19. Virus, so there's just so much more research we have around the flu. And to your point, right, the numbers don't seem to match up between how many get the flu and now with this COVID-19 virus. The only thing that's really interesting is just the percentage, right? You know, now that, you know, 0.01% of people die from the flu, and they're saying now that 3% of people die from the coronavirus. So the coronavirus, you know, according to research, current research, is could be 10 times more lethal than the flu.
Wow. So the best thing that we can do as on a personal level, what are some of the things that we need to do to keep from getting this virus?
Right. Great question. First thing is obviously wash your hands more often. Touch your face less often, you know, even shake hands less often. I'm now seeing people fist pump, you know, instead of shaking hands and coughing into your elbow or sleeve. And just being mindful as you travel or if you go into these large public places of maybe social distancing. Now they're saying, you know, 6 feet away from people. And if, again, you're around people who are sick, particularly the elderly who are immune compromised, that's something to look out for, because there's so many individuals that are asymptomatic that could be potentially spreading this to the elderly. So it's just right now something to be mindful of, and continue just to take preventative measures and get reliable information from really good sources.
Right, which isn't always the case. People, I think it has been very dramatized on the news. Every station is promoting, in my opinion, kind of a panicky situation, which is causing a lot of people to overreact, to the point that that they're being overly cautious. I think that caution is something that you should use, but to be overly cautious is just makes you fearful, and being fearful is certainly not a good mental condition with regard to your physical body. If you have fears, if you have fear, it's going to impact your immune system, correct?
Yes, exactly. You know, particularly stress, because physiologically, you know, once you have stress in your body, you have this release of cortisol. So
right.
Cortisol is the stress hormone. So that could be affecting, and that's why it affects people's immune system. And we're seeing a great deal of anxiety. I think we're seeing much more, you know, anxious people now, just, again, watching the news and following social media. And that could create a high level of affecting your immune system as well.
Right. Stress causes inflammation, which causes problems. And so I try not to listen to the news. It's the same thing on all, actually you only have like five entities, news entities. And gosh, it's scary to listen to the news. And
right.
Rather than just listen to your common sense and say, okay, and particularly if you have a pre-existing condition, if you're elderly, if you're, you have to take into consideration where you start from. If you have a condition, a pre-existing condition, then you should obviously be aware of that and take care of yourself so that you do not place yourself in jeopardy any more than you need to. But with a lot of services being cut, it really makes it very difficult for people. It really makes it difficult because people come to depend on certain services, and those services are no longer there, which is stresses a person out even more. Okay, we are going to the top of the hour break. We will be right back, and we'll pick this up on the other side of the top of the hour break. Be right back. Brian, and he is a physician. We're talking about the coronavirus or COVID-19, and I think that we don't generally realize how many times a day that we touch our faces. And I have an email question. Or statement. The experts on TV have been telling us that we should do lots of hand washing. And they've also been saying that we should avoid touching our faces with our hands. I'm wondering, if we go out in public and then wash our hands when we get home, isn't it then okay to touch our faces after we've washed our hands, but before we go out in public again? And as I mentioned, and as you've indicated, we touch our faces all the time. I'm touching my face right now, but it's not something it's just we're in the habit of doing that. That's what we do. We touch our faces a lot.
Right, correct. And really, in regard to that question, you know, if you're around sick people at all or around children or in public places, and if you've touched something that has been, you know, particularly infected by the virus, then that's something that to keep your now, just to be mindful of in regards to washing your hands. And they say that hand washing reduces the chance of contracting a respiratory illness by about 54%. So the best odds of any option. So if you're washing your hands, you know, throughout the day, and if by chance you do touch your face, I think all will be well. And just be mindful if you're around, you know, sick people during that time, if you are touching your face, just take the proper precautions.
Right. And people who do have, well, things like asthma or some other respiratory situation does not mean that they have COVID-19. It simply means that they have a problem with asthma, perhaps a long-term problem with asthma. Doesn't mean that they have COVID-19. I think hand washing is a good thing to do. After you use the restroom, you wash your hands. After you do any cooking where you're handling raw meat or fish or chicken, you should wash your hands. You should wash the cutting board, and it shouldn't be a wooden cutting board. It should be something that does not that will not draw in bacteria. Wash it with hot soap and water. It's just good using good common sense with your activities and what you're doing in order to protect yourself from bacteria and or viruses, correct?
Yes, correct. And even too, looking at, I've had people ask about hand sanitizers, and alcohol is an antiseptic, on the hand sanitizer. So the coronavirus is actually an enveloped virus, and that contains, some of these hand sanitizers, as long as it contains about 60% and 95% alcohol, that can certainly help as well as far as kill the virus if soap and water are not available.
Good. People can carry those little bottles of hand sanitizers in their purse or in their pocket. They're very inexpensive and easy to obtain. Well, they used to be. I'm not sure they are right this minute. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. We will be right back. Is Dr. Dan O'Brien, and he is a physician and professor, and he believes in innovative healthcare technologies and in public health. And one of the individuals in the chat room indicated that he or she has been asked not to visit a person in a facility. Apparently his mother or her mother is in a nursing home, and up until this situation with COVID-19, this person has been very active with supporting his mother's, just supporting a person that's in the situation that his or her mother is in. And how do you explain that, or when a person is in a facility and depends on people visiting and depends on seeing family, that could really impact a lot of people who are in facilities as far as their relationships and as far as they need support. And then all of a sudden, your child isn't visiting anymore. I think that's kind of cruel. But I understand. But there certainly should be some way of working around that situation so that you don't have to drop your responsibilities to to attend to the emotional support of people who are not living within your home. What are your thoughts on that?
With loved ones and the elderly, it's certainly an interesting situation. And I, gosh, for those that have, you know, including myself, you know, taking care of loved ones that are the elderly, I would, you know, certainly say, you know, continue to take precautions, but also, you know, feel like we have to support your loved ones. So if you feel like attending, you know, going to the nursing facility would be a good idea, I think that would be perfectly fine. Just take proper precautions of hand washing and just being really aware, you know, of common sense of what's kind of around you and if people are sick around you too. So I think just continuing the proper precautions of, you know, coughing over your sleeve, washing your hands, you know, maybe not touching your face in that regard. But certainly if loved ones need attention and you're feeling well and you feel like those around are well as well, I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to continue to support and visit the elderly if you find it's appropriate.
Right. But as I mentioned, there are some facilities that have absolutely cut off all visits from supportive relatives, no matter who they are, what their physical condition is. They've just simply cut them off, which seems, it just seems to defeat the purpose of, well, you should support your relatives. You should offer the emotional support that people need. And all of a sudden, somebody doesn't go and visit their mother because the facility has said no visits. It just seems that it's overkill.
Right, exactly. I'd have to, you know, certainly agree with you. I think right now there's just, we don't have that much data on the coronavirus and kind of where and how rapidly it's spreading. So I think everyone's just on high alert in regards to, you know, places where the elderly are, those were immunocompromised individuals. But again, I think being aware of what's around you, utilizing, you know, precautions. But my gosh, to your point, right, we need to really support the elderly during this time. And I think it might even be on a positive, bring people closer together as people are looking out more for the elderly or reaching out to grandparents and parents and loved ones to make sure everyone's doing okay. So hopefully there's some positive relationship building taking place because of all this.
Right. You have indicated that we can prevent viruses like COVID-19 and by doing the things that we should be doing, washing our hands, etc. Are there other things we could or should be doing to help others, to help others understand and to not overreact? I think there's been so much overreaction where people are fighting in the aisles at Walmart for toilet paper, for Pete's sake. It's just caused such a panic.
Right, exactly. And when you look at some of the symptoms, right, so fever, shortness of breath, cough, also included in that would be travel, you know, if you're traveling, and also exposure to sick people. So these are very, right. These can be very serious where it's not everyone has, you know, because some patients come in and say, well, I've had, you know, cough or shortness of breath. It doesn't automatically mean that you've got the COVID-19 virus. It just depends on the severity. And again, have you been traveling? Have you been exposed? So there's additional medical type of questions that need to be answered before there's just an assumption that someone does have the COVID-19 virus.
Exactly. You have to be exposed to it. And if you are not, if you haven't been traveling, if you have lead a rather quiet life, I just think that people are overreacting. The other thing too is that you see a lot of people wearing masks, people who shouldn't be wearing masks. The people that should be wearing the surgical mask are the people who have it, who have been tested, or at least maybe suspect that they have it, rather than all these people putting on these masks and dressing up, and it just seems like it's so ridiculous that it causes more panic. And the number of people that actually have it, as opposed to the people that don't, you have to question, oh my gosh, this just seems like the news media is really promoting a lot of panic.
Right, exactly. And then you may run into a supply and demand issue with the mask. For those that really need it, we don't want to get to a situation where we've run out of masks. So I thoroughly agree to your point, especially, you know, traveling, being around the country as well, and seeing the amount of people that are wearing these masks.
Right. We should open the lines so that people can call in and ask questions. So we will accept calls at 800-313-9443. And there was a situation, our board operator, our producer, said that that he went to the store and there was no, and it was late. It was late. There was no fruit, no vegetables, no fresh meat, no water, no canned food, no eggs, no cereal, no paper products. Everything was gone. And I have seen pictures and videos of people who have been fighting over toilet paper. And certainly that's something that everybody needs. But to just go nuts over all of this, it just seems like, well, a panicky situation that is just not doing anybody any good. We do have a caller, Tom in Utah. Tom?
Hi there, Deanna.
Hi.
What's
how
sad?
Are you?
Well, a little upset. I was blinded, I can't always check whatever's happening around me. I went out, just to give you a little background, and you do know I used to work in veterinary and human pathology, so I understand this nonsense pretty clear. But I unfortunately am at the mercy of other people, and I went out with a friend, and he took me to a pizza place where they provide both regular and vegan pizzas. And you know why I'm a vegan is because I know that the primary vector for all these diseases is in the animal blood. But nobody ever talks about that. They talk about, well, don't get too close to somebody who's coughing or sneezing, but you walk right into the butcher shop and have no problem handling a cadaver full of these organisms. But anyway, I went into this pizza place and ordered a vegan pizza. But unfortunately, the girl, she had her gloves on, very carefully following the food handler's, you know, protocols. The only thing was that somehow there was a couple of flakes of cheese, real cheese, that ended up in the bin that should have been the Deja, you know, or the almond cheese that they make the vegan pizzas with. And I didn't realize that there was a cross-contamination until I got down to the last bite of that cheese. And when I recognized that flavor, I said, oh, crap, I'm going to be down with a sore throat in 3 days. Lo and behold, that was a fact. So I didn't have contact with anybody who was coughing at me. I didn't shake hands with anybody. Yet within 3 days, I was dealing with a sore throat, and I'm just now finishing up. But nobody ever talks about the real vector. It's the frickin' bloody dead animals that you guys want to consume. You bring them into your house, put them in your refrigerator, pull them out, and you handle them like an idiot physician. How many times have you ever put on gloves to handle the flesh that you pull out of your refrigerator? You say, well, we'll just go wash our hands. Well, your fingerprints are these canyons which harbor organisms once they get in there. washing them doesn't always get them out. That's why we don't do that in the surgical theater. We don't go in and, well, we'll just wash our hands and operate on this patient and just wash your hands afterwards. We put on a barrier. That same practice should be performed in your own kitchen. If you're intent on eating a piece of dead animal or sucking on their fluids, you know, you talk about the particles being transmitted through the air. Number one, saliva is very acidic. So it's hard-pressed to get any bacteria or virus to survive very long in somebody's cough. But when you take a glass of milk, and I used this experience down in the Santa Monica when Paul McCartney had me teaching him some of his friends after Linda died with breast cancer. I took a brand new container of freshly pasteurized milk, Took a couple of drops, put it on a slide, turned on that projection microscope. They got to see about two or three dozen coliform bacteria on that screen when we first put that fresh milk there. And after about 10 or 15 minutes after the light had warmed it up, those bacteria multiplied. And after about half an hour, the screen was just almost wall-to-wall bacteria that had doubled. And you do know that these viruses cannot be vectored on their own. They have to be vectored in a bacteria. That bacteria provides the nourishment and the protection for those viruses. It provides the DNA supplies. And then when the bacteria get in you, then they're the little boat with the propeller that takes them to your lung tissue or wherever they're, you know, specifically able to replicate. But, you know, it just drives me nuts in all this nonsense. Nobody ever talks about the food supply. By the way, those cruise ships, when they go to China, they were stocked or provisioned in America enough to get them to China. So when they got to China, where do you think they were getting their food stocks to provision the trip back? From China. So, and by the way, isn't it curious that most of the passengers were not sickened? That about 17, I think so, of the crew were. Well, who are the 17? Those are the kitchen help. Nobody's ever paid attention to that. They don't want you to know that because it might prevent you from, number one, providing profit for the livestock industry and profit for the medical industry. So if you don't want the disease in your house, don't bring it in.
Oh, okay. Dr. Dan, why don't you address what Tom has just said?
Yeah, no, very, very insightful. Thank you for your question. I think the first thing is obviously the coronavirus being zoonotic, right? So you make a great point. And zoonotic.
Everything is zoonotic. Everything is zoonotic.
Correct. Which transfers from, as you know, animals to humans. So certainly they're
what is
right
a
now,
human?
Not right. So there's not too much research right now, and maybe there needs to be, to your point, right, as far as what's actually, what
animals. That research is done, but they keep it silent because they don't want to interfere with profit or make you upset.
Let Dr. Dan finish his answer.
Sure. So just certainly, you know, being that zoonotic, you know, type, moving from animals to humans. And I think right now there's just not a lot of research. Now, there's rumors could have been a bat or what type of animal. So I think right now they're still trying to figure out the exact cause. But to your point, right, I mean, there certainly does need to be some answers to those questions as far as maybe what caused this. And looking into, you know, again, that meat market in Wuhan, China, would certainly be interesting. But you certainly bring up a great point. I think research is still really new, and I think as we learn more about this, the coronavirus is evolving, we should have answers to those questions.
In 1993, I was asked to go down to the Four Corners when they had that problem with the hantavirus. They were being told, the Navajos, Utes, Zunis, and Hopis, they were being told it was in the dust and the droppings of the rodents. Yet I said, I want you, see, in the Native Americans, they trusted me since I actually labored and grew up a little bit in the Four Corners. I said, I want you to observe these CDC technicians when they're out collecting these, quote, trapped rats, trapped rodents. When they crawl underneath your trailer to go get this trap that they've set down there before, are they wearing a mask or a respirator? Are they wearing anything to protect them from the dust and the droppings of these rodents? And as they observed, they said, no. All they're wearing is gloves and knee pads. So I said, what are they trying to protect themselves from the sharp rocks? Now, they'll take that container, that cage with the rat in it, put it in the back of their pickup, drive it over to the CDC trailer. That's when they will put on a space suit. That's because they're going to take that animal in the lab, excuse me, perforate its body to get blood samples or whatever. That's the time that there's a risk of disease transfer. So then as I explained to the Native Americans, so now by watching them not taking any precautions against the dust and droppings, what do they know or what does somebody know that you don't know? I said, the reality is it has to be blood to blood. So I said, now try to figure out how this rodent carrying this disease is somehow getting into you. And of course, they kept thinking and thinking, and I said, what animal eats rodents and you eat that animal? What animal eats snakes and you eat that animal? And of course, it took them a while, but they finally realized that the number one vector from the rat to them was their chickens. The mother would come along and grab a chicken, spin it around, crack its neck, cut it open, and it had blood all over her hands. And at that point, that hantavirus was entering the Native American family.
Wow.
And nobody ever told them that.
Okay, well, Tom, thank you so much. We will be right back. And Dr. Dan, you can address the issues that Tom has brought up. We'll be right back momentarily.
Starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back with our guest, Dan O'Brien. And what are your thoughts regarding what Tom suggested or what he said? Are you there? Did we
lose him?
Dr. Dan, are you there? Did we lose our guest? Maybe he muted himself. People have been eating chickens for a very long time.
And people have been sick for a very long time, too.
Okay.
Hello.
Dr. Dan, what are your thoughts about what Tom has said? Tom, let's let Dr. Dan respond to your comments. Dr. Dan, are you there?
Yes, and this is James. Can you hear me from Ohio?
Well, no, I was wondering. Okay, I guess we lost Dr. Dan. So maybe we need to get him back. Anyway, Tom brought up some very interesting points. And certainly, we've been eating chickens for a very long time. And I don't know that chickens, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, but we all know that we should cook everything thoroughly, and we should not be eating things that are undercooked, certainly we shouldn't be eating blood or other things. Have we got Dr. Dan back or no? Oh, okay, great. Dr. Dan, we lost you. Are you back?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay. Would you like to respond to what Tom said?
Oh, sure, yeah, just in regards, if that was the previous caller, in regards to, the coronavirus kind of being that zoonotic disease, right, transferring between animals to humans. So I think right now as we learn more as far as research, I think we'll be able to kind of pinpoint maybe the exact animal that had caused this.
Okay, yeah. And it's difficult to know because there are so many variables. For instance, the travel time over, the food that the people who visited China consumed on their way there, the things that they consumed on their way back. It's very difficult to put a blanket statement on everybody on a cruise ship when only just a few people were diagnosed or said to have COVID-19. So why didn't everybody who ate the same thing have COVID-19? Was it because their immune system was better, whether they washed their hands or so it doesn't attack everybody that does the same thing, eats the same thing. It just attacks people who, as you suggested earlier, have questionable immune systems, who are already vulnerable to certain things. Wouldn't you agree with that or no?
Yes, absolutely. You know, especially to your point, right, with the elderly, looking at if there's particular, you know, malignancies or diabetes or long-standing hypertension, you know, those people that are more susceptible, certainly to be kind of a little bit more watchful.
Right. Okay, we do have another caller. Let's take this other caller. James in Ohio.
Yes. So I'm here. Hello?
Yes, yes.
I had the delightful experience of being on your show the first Saturday of the year, I believe in January. But I was going to augment something of what Tom was saying, where he's suggesting a vegetarian diet. And, of course, I met Howard Lyman. Have you heard of Howard's book called The Mad Cowboy Who Won't Eat Meat?
No, I don't believe I have. Go ahead.
He used to be a lobbyist for the vegetarian people when he was around D.C. He's moved to the West Coast to retirement. He's a third or fourth generation rancher from up in Montana. But Howard Lyman was interviewed on Oprah Winfrey's program, and they were sued by the Texan beef growers. Do you know anything of that?
No.
Nope. Moreover, there's another reference. I don't mean to go off point here, but I believe you lost a daughter last August.
I did.
I want to mail you information. I've been extremely busy from the first of the year. And I'll mention this because the callers in general might be aware of it. There's a woman recovered from breast cancer.
Okay, we do need to go to a real quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back with our guest, Dr. Dan O'Brien, and we had James in Ohio that had a question or comment James, welcome.
Thank you. Howard Lyman was over in Europe, probably in the UK someplace. They were talking about mad cow disease. Well, because he was somewhat of an outsider and they considered him an expert, they recruited him for Oprah Winfrey's program, and later they were sued because of the, I guess you'd call it videotape, that went on TV, where Oprah was saying, oh, I'll never eat a burger again. And the comments that Howard would confide was when they were coming out of the studio and they taped that recording, he was walking out, and maybe two or three steps behind him was Oprah, and she said, I'm going to eat more turkey and chicken. And Howard turns around to her and says, should I tell you what they feed the turkeys and the chickens? Meaning, I grew up on a farm here in Ohio. I remember Sylvesterol being implanted in the ear of the animal in order to augment the growth. And I figure my own father probably perished from all the herbicides and pesticides on a family farm. He had Parkinson's disease. But the poisons and the things that come from meat products are very serious, meaning the nitrites, the fruit coloring, and so forth. But back to this issue of the, like what I say, the viral disease, I believe you'd have a common cold that's caused by a virus. That's often called coryza, the common cold. If you maintain an alkaline-reacting fluid in your body, so to speak, throughout the season, you can go the whole winter without a cold. And the way that would happen for Tom, as he was talking the vegetarian angle, sweets and meats are to be avoided, as well as staying up all night and having too much fatigue. And instead, the fresh fruits and vegetables would contribute to an alkaline pattern in your body's digestion and so forth. Am I making any sense?
Dr. Dan?
Yes, no, that's certainly, again, another insightful comment. Absolutely. You know, when you look at, you know, a well-balanced diet of fresh fruits and vegetables, that's certainly key. And just in regards to, you're right, you know, with some of the meat products that people are consuming and really how healthy is that? You know, again, I'd recommend, to your point, right, I mean, just getting enough fruits and vegetables in your diet, having a very balanced, nutritious diet. And there's been, too, a lot of talk, I know, in regards to the Mediterranean diet being really good for you as well. So there's all sorts of diets out there. I really, you know, would tell people everything in moderation, but there's certainly something to be said about some of the meats that we're eating with the amount of nitrates and preservatives in them.
Indeed, yes, and I think that also you need to be careful of the like wheat, which they spray with glyphosate after it's harvested, and that is definitely something that people want to avoid, as it causes all kinds of problems, which have been verified that so. You really need to not trust but verify. Figure out what you're eating, what it is causing, what your symptoms are, and stay away from sugar. Eat a, like you mentioned, a Mediterranean style diet, which is a lot of fruit, vegetables, and maybe fish and chicken, and just a good variety, and not a lot of carbohydrates, because carbohydrates do contribute to candida, and which can be really bad, right?
Yes, absolutely. It just biochemically, right, carbohydrates break down into sugar, which stores as fat. So that's just so crucial, you know, to stay away from, you know, sugars. For sure.
Right. James, did you have another comment or a question?
Well, I can mention a web page very quickly about the woman who was in the, she was a physician, she worked in California. Her web page was the drday.com. Do you remember that? drday.com? Dr. Lorraine Day.
Oh, right, yes. Mm-hmm.
She's a grandmother now, and on her web page she shows her two grandchildren, the babies, I believe. And I thought her webpage was remarkably good. I was listening to her about 25 years ago in Michigan after I'd been injured. I listened to her still about 16 hours a day. But she would point out that they were very unsuccessful using chemotherapy. and surgery and maybe radiation for treating cancer. And she goes off on a different pattern and uses better diet. That's about all I need to say. We might talk privately if you want to call me, or I could call you at Chicago area sometime if you want to.
Yes, I I have interviewed Dr. Day, and particularly about her breast cancer and the treatment that she used, which was very successful. So, anyway, thanks for your call, James.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. God bless you also. Okay, so there's so many variables and so many things that contribute to our overall health, and to certainly diet is a really big thing when you're talking about health. It's how we feed our body, how we digest. How it's just a very important thing. You can't just eat what you want and expect to be healthy, and there are just a lot of things that are very, very unhealthy. We do have another caller, Sebastian in Sweden. Sebastian?
Yes, hello. This is, I just want to call you to tell you the situation in Sweden is really bad, and we have 961 cases and 147 today, and that's a population of 12 million. And I think it's going to get higher, and because the government is being so nonchalant about the whole thing, they're not even testing people for the COVID-19. They said they stopped testing them. And people in my age group, and I'm in one of those categories. I'm 72, and I have a bad heart, and I have diabetes, but I keep it. I don't have to take shots or pills. I just try to keep it under control by my diet, and I also take blood thinners. So this, I'm living in that situation that now I've got enough food for 6 months, almost 6 months, maybe 4 months for me and my two cats. I have enough cat food for them as well. So I'm going to just stay here in the home. I'm not going out anywhere. I'm not going to buy any. I just got vitamins and some herbs from the garden, and I'll start my greenhouse going, and maybe, you know, growing vegetables, tomatoes, lettuce, and squash. But I don't know. I think it's almost like the majority of the people who die from it are over 60. And I just think it's something, it's almost like it's a thing against old people that they want to get rid of them so they can get better housing for the young people and et cetera, et cetera. I know we have a lot in Sweden, pensioners, and all throughout Europe, you know, a lot of baby boomers. So like in Italy today, they had 3,487 new cases. So they're up at 21,157 today. So the situation in Europe is the new epicenter of the whole, of the corona. So I understand President Trump when he said he's not going to take any more flights from Europe. The whole European common market is just, it's the reason why we have it. If we could close our own borders and everyone just could go back the way they were before the common market, I think it would be a better place to live. When I first came here, it was just so beautiful. It was just so completely different. And now sometimes I wish I was back in the States. At least I could protect my home with a weapon, which you can't do here in Sweden. So I'm really disappointed with this, the way a lot of governments are handling the situation. I mean, China and the East countries, they seem to be doing okay now. They're coming down on the deaths. So, but I was just asked the doctor, is there any other vitamins besides vitamin C? And of course, you get vitamin D from the sun. Is there any other thing that would sort of, any other vitamin or mineral would sort of combat this COVID-19?
Right. No. Great. Great question. Thank you so much too for your feedback, and of course for your question. And I think you're actually spot on as far as those vitamins. You know, vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, you know, also known as the acronym ACE, they used to teach us in medical school, are certainly ones to keep in, you know, keep in mind for vitamins. So A, C, and E, I would certainly stick with in regards to boosting your immune system. And whatever else you can do, it seems like you're doing all the right things, and I certainly applaud you for that. But continue to find ways to boost your immune system, right? Well-balanced diet, getting plenty of sleep will certainly help in this regard. And the immune system plays such a crucial role.
Sebastian, how long have you been in Sweden?
Since 1970. I came to Europe in 69.
Okay.
I mean, I've been in 68, actually. So I've been quite a long time. I don't know. I think I had to have a relatives back in the States in Virginia, a sister, and I call. And they seem they don't have many cases. The only cases they have in Virginia are around Quantico, and we all know what that is. So those people travel all around the world. But okay, well, thank you very much, Deanna. And take care.
You too. Take care. Take care of your cats too.
Yeah, I do that. But one, he goes out. He's called the Dude, and he goes out for 2 or 3 days, and he comes home. You know. And then, but I have one that stays home all the time. She's here. Unfortunately, he's not operated. I tried to get him, and I called the veterinarian. And the day he came home every morning, except for the morning that I was supposed to take him to the vet. He just stayed away. For some reason, he knew.
They're pretty intuitive.
So I don't. They are. They're really smart animals when you think about it. It's amazing how they. He acts like a dog. He goes out in the rain. He comes in. He shakes off, and you know he can get in your lap, and you can pet him like a little dog. It's they're strange animals. Two different personalities.
Yes.
Two different cats.
Yes, I have two cats also. Well, thank you very much, Sebastian.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Take care. Bye bye. Stay well. Alrighty, I don't think we have any more callers. So what are your comments regarding, if you have any additional comments regarding what Sebastian said? But it's nice to have a caller from another country that gives us some perspective about another place.
Right, absolutely. And just, again, this shows with the coronavirus, you know, kind of where it's spreading to. You know, according to the recent literature, you know, it's across 118 countries. So there's certainly, obviously, in China being affected, Italy, where he's at, and in Sweden. So just how speed is everything in regards to this, and just understanding population movement of where this is actually spreading. And he made some great points in regards to the immune system, just finding ways to boost your immune system, you know, through vitamin C, through vitamin D, which actually helps with the absorption of vitamin C, and of course vitamin A and vitamin E, which are antioxidants, are also important when looking at vitamins.
Right. And yes, I appreciate his phone call. All righty. So you also indicate that you believe in something called telemedicine. Digital health, robotic surgery technology. Tell us about telemedicine. What is that?
Yeah, so telemedicine is, you know, imagine you're needing assistance and you live kind of maybe in a rural area. You know, say you live in Chicago or take a big city, New York, LA, and you can't quite get to some of the major hospitals. When you look at telemedicine, you could be in some of the rural areas and still kind of get care via kind of virtual. We're seeing a lot with technology, and I think with this case with the coronavirus, as people are not heading into hospitals, maybe they're afraid they'll be around sick people or can't get the treatment they need right away, telemedicine certainly could be a great avenue for patients to gain that access. You know, right now, quality of care, cost, access are three major things in healthcare, and the telemedicine, I believe, can help with the access, especially in this pandemic with the coronavirus.
Yes, and which brings up another thought that which we talked briefly about a few minutes ago was that people who are in nursing homes or in facilities that are now unable to have their relatives come in to give them the emotional support that they need, using telemedicine or that format to be able to talk with them via Skype or via that particular way, that you could still visit with them, still support them emotionally, seems like a really great idea. If you can't do it in person, then that would certainly fill a measure of what they really need is support from family. Correct?
Yes, absolutely. And just, you know, again, the 21st century, this is a great time to utilize technology like telemedicine.
Indeed. Indeed. And doctors may converse with their patients using this method. If a person is in a facility, then the nurses at the facility can take the pulse or whatever else needs to be done and report it directly to the doctor. It seems like a very worthwhile thing to engage in.
Yes, absolutely, especially as nurses and doctors are overwhelmed in the hospital. It's a great avenue to gain access to healthcare.
Indeed. So as much as we sometimes are negative about the technology, I certainly don't use a lot of technological things. I don't have a microwave. I don't have a lot of dangerous technology within my home, things that I think are introduce frequencies that I don't want to expose my body to. But I think that technology can also be a good thing if used in a very beneficial way that would support, emotionally support or physically support your relatives. Okay, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will return momentarily. Back with our guest, Dr. Dan O'Brien, and we have just a few minutes. Would you like to respond to anything that's been said or talk about the digital health, the robotic surgery, which I find very interesting? I think that oftentimes that surgery it really is sometimes necessary, but sometimes the recovery is quite lengthy, and it requires a lot of recovery time. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Robotic technology. There's several actually companies, I think, that have come out with, you know, obviously robotic technology in the OR. And what they've shown is you're able to treat more patients. So, again, that's able to increase the access while also reducing possible infections and having short, you know, smaller incisions. So there certainly seems to be a market for robotic technology being able to treat more patients. And, again, that would increase the access, even though there are some, you know, there could be some drawbacks to utilizing it because it's not as traditional route of going through surgery. So that's certainly been, you know, very interesting. And also, too, which kind of relates to the coronavirus, and there's been a lot of kind of debate as far as AI, artificial intelligence right now. It's transformed every industry, and it seems like it could be possibly transforming the healthcare industry when we look at another public health tool to be able to look at real-time data around the coronavirus, maybe being able to predict through predictive analytics, through this machine learning algorithm with AI, if maybe another occurrence would be happening. So certainly, you know, AI could be transformed in this case as maybe a public health tool to be utilized in healthcare with this virus.
Sure. Another thing, too, that is of concern within the hospital situation environment is that often you can pick up something at the hospital that is worse than what you went in for, that you can pick up C. diff, or you can pick up other bacteria that actually make you sick. And it's just not a healthy... Hospitals are not healthy places to be.
Right, right.
MRSA.
Yeah, it certainly is amazing, right?
Yes.
How you walk in and then you come out actually sicker. So it's always... Boy, sometimes even care at the home could be warranted in certain situations.
Right, yes. I think that people have to take all of this into consideration when you... when you're ill, you have to take responsibility for what you're doing, what you're teaching your children, for take a great deal more responsibility for your own health rather than just make it your doctor's responsibility. Take an active part in your recovery, in the way that you live, and what you choose to eat, and don't expect to just cure everything with a script from your doctor. But take some responsibility, correct?
Yes, totally agree to that, Deanna. That is a fantastic point.
So, well, anyway, it's been delightful having you on the program, and wonderful to talk with you. And thanks to the callers. And take care and keep doing a great job.
Great. Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed
it. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, listeners. Talk with you next week. Take care.